Afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today's Tuesday, March 9th. Maybe we all wish it was March 19th, sorry. A little skipping ahead. 2021, let the record reflect, time is 3:30 p.m. Today, so far, we have present Senator Holland, Senator Kawasaki, myself, Chair Schauer. Hopefully, we'll be joined by the other two committee members soon. I'd like to remind everybody, please turn off your cell phones. Staff assisting us today, we have Terrence Shanigan back, State Affairs Committee aide. We have Carrie Cooper, writer with Senate Records, and we have Marissa with us from the LAO. Three items on today's agenda. We're going to hear first SB 71, Council on Arts, Plates, and Management Art, Manage Art, sponsored by Senator Stevens. Second, SB 23, Initiative Severability, sponsored by Senator Reback. Third, BSB 76, Abandoned Vehicles, Private Property, sponsored by Senator Keel. Let the record reflect, Senator Reinbold is with us. Are there any questions or comments from today's committee members before we proceed with the first item? No updates. Copy. All right, seeing none, we're going to move on to the first item on the agenda, SB 71, Council on the Arts, Plates and Managed Art, sponsored by Senator Stevens. As a note for the committee, as far as who we have available to us will be Senator Stevens and his staff. We have a few others that may come on the line. We'll see if we get Jeffrey Smith with us from the Division of Motor Vehicles, Andrew Noble, Executive Director of Alaska State Council of the Arts, and Benjamin Brown, Chair of the Alaska State Council of the Arts, for help. Senator Stevens, sir, you have been here for a while. You know the drill. When you're ready, please take it away.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, Gary Stevens, Senator from Kodiak. Thank you for listening to this bill today. This bill came at a request from the State Arts, the Alaska State Council of the Arts. It's a result of some complications that occurred in their budget structure. Actually, that came in the 2019 budget cycle. It's pretty much a housekeeping measure to allow them to have a little more stability in their organization. But one thing it does not do, it does not create a new plate, so that's not an issue here. It does amend an existing plate program and provides that to the Arts Council with some additional revenue. That's the purpose of it, from the supporters. So, Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman, you should never say it's a simple bill. It is a simple bill. But you shouldn't say that. And at this point, I'll turn this over to my staffer, Tim Lamkin. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Lamkin, staff to Senator Stevens. To give the committee a bit of a summary of what the bill does, in addition to this license plate component, it allows the DMV to collect a fee for this artistic plate and for those monies to be applied directly toward the Arts Council's budget. And the intent there is to help reduce their dependency on our general fund. It affirms that the state's attorney general is generally legal counsel for the Arts Council, as consistent with most agencies, but it also provides the means for them to have their own outside counsel from time to time as needed and with consistent with other state agencies. Another important thing that it does is it holds harmless their private fundraising activities from vetoes of the Executive Budget Act. As regards the existing plate design competition, currently in statute it indicates that there shall be such a competition every 4 years, and while they certainly are interested in having such a competition every 4 years, this would change it slightly to give them the flexibility that they may have such a competition. And then in follow-up to that is it allows them to compensate the winning artist with a modest reward for contributing that artwork, which ultimately results in license plates being on tens of thousands of vehicles in Alaska. It makes their authority clear, or more clear, in managing not only the art that they are responsible for having commissioned and paid for and assigning those locations, but also makes clear that same art, when it's time to decommission it or retire that art, that they are responsible for figuring out where it goes. I have the chairman of the Arts Council handy, as well as their executive director and a representative of the DMV to answer any questions you may have. That completes the summary of the bill, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to go into the sectional if it pleases you.
We can play that either way you'd like to. I'm looking online so far. I don't have them available. I assume they're in the room?
On the screen.
Oh, that's how good I'm doing here with this one, right? I'm looking here, and they're not here. They're over there. Okay, and that's I will defer to your desire for the flow. Would you prefer to have them with comments first or go through the sectional?
I suppose we can let them talk first. My summary is pretty much going to be the same as the sectional. It's just in more detail.
Okay, then just for the will of the committee, are there any questions regarding the bill content or what would be called a sectional analysis before we go to the invited testimony. Then we'll go ahead and go with that at this time. And when you're ready, sir, go ahead and put yourself on the record with your name, who you represent, and begin with your testimony.
All right, so we'll do an audio check first. Mr. Chairman, am I audible?
Loud and clear.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Well, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate State Affairs Committee, I am Benjamin Brown, and I am the chairman of the Alaska State Council on the Arts. It's a volunteer position. I was first appointed as vice chair by Governor Murkowski many years ago, and then appointed as chairman by Governor Palin, and subsequently reappointed by Governor Parnell and Governor Walker, and most recently by Governor Dunleavy. So it's a pleasure to be here, and it's an agency I care very much about, having spent a lot of time working with the staff and with others on our board. As Senator Stevens and Mr. Lampkin explained to the committee, this bill is simple in the great scheme of things, but it's very important because it is going to enable us to carry more of our own weight. The most important provision of the bill is the potential monetization of the Alaska Artistic License Plate Program. And as Mr. Lampkin will be able to show you, and I think Mr. Shanigan, your committee aide, Mr. Chairman, already has some documentation from DMV, our artistic license plates are extremely popular. And anecdotally, if you just drive around Juneau or Anchorage or any community in the state, you're going to see them on a lot of cars. Sometimes every car around you at a stoplight will have Alaska artistic license plates on them. And currently, there's no surcharge for one of those plates. Someone can get one of those just as easily as they can get one of the ones with the little bear or one of the blue and gold plates. And while that's good and well, we felt, especially in response to the fiscal crisis the state's been undergoing for the past several years, to try to monetize the program and get a modest amount of money from each of those Alaskans who's registering a car would be a good way to reduce our agency's dependence on undesignated general funds and shift some of that to designated general funds. The important point I want to make sure everyone on the committee understands is there is a requirement in federal law, the National Arts and Humanities Act, that requires every state that has a state arts agency, which is all 50 states, and every territory, including the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, American Samoa, Guam, to provide a territorial or a state match to trigger money from the National Endowment for the Arts. So for in the current budget, slightly less than $700,000 invested by the state of Alaska through the legislature will trigger a little bit more than that from the National Endowment for the Arts, but then that amount of governmental money is more than matched by private foundation money from our partners at the Rasmussen Foundation, the Margaret A. Cargill Philanthropies, the Atwood Foundation, the South Central Foundation, and some other foundation partners. There's no other agency I'm aware of in state government that offers a value proposition like that. We're very proud of that. We want to continue to move in that trajectory, and this bill is one very important way that will help us to do so. So that's the main reason we're here today, Mr. Chairman. The other provisions of the bill, Mr. Lampkin is going to do an admirable job, I know, going through the sectional analysis. The other provisions of the bill, I think, reflect the wisdom that when you're taking the trouble to make a statutory change, you should clean up everything you can in the statute in question. So our enabling statute had a few other ambiguities. As Mr. Lampkin specified, the issue of the legal counsel arose when the veto happened in 2019, and I was speaking to the same assistant attorney general as the Department of Education and Early Development was, and that person had a conflict because we had not harmonious needs in terms of legal advice. It's common for many state agencies to have the attorney general designated in their enabling statutes as legal counsel, so that's what Section 3 of the bill does. The exemption from the Executive Branch Budget Act for our foundation partner money is something that actually we've discussed with the administration, and the administration is open to, because those are not indeed state or federal dollars. It was actually, I believe, Mr. Lampkin's idea to make the language about the license plate competition non-mandatory, and that just was another lesson learned, I think, when the vetoes occurred and we were not able to be in operation for a while. It would have been impossible had that been the year that the four-year period had come up with for us to conduct a new contest. But we're very eager to do so based on the huge success of the existing artistic license plate program. And Mr. Lampkin also mentioned the adding to our duties, managing and adopting policies and procedures for the relocation, disposition, and exchange of works of art acquired. from the Art and Public Places Fund and the Percent for Art program. And that's a necessary change because doing a little looking into this, we discovered that actually a majority of states do not have statutory or regulatory provisions for deaccessioning public, a lot of the public art that's in their Percent for Art programs. And, you know, buildings last a long time, but nothing lasts forever in this world. And when a building that has a piece of Percent for Art artwork in it is going to be torn down, we want to have some sort of a plan for that and not just let circumstances unfold. We figure it's better to be proactive about that because those are public assets and they should be managed and disposed of in a manner that respects the artist and also the public investment. So I don't want to go on any longer. I know you have other legislation on the agenda today. I'm absolutely happy to answer any questions you have, Mr. Chairman, or any of the members of the committee. And if there's anything else I can do to help inform your deliberations, I stand at your service to do so.
Okay. Thank you, sir, for the presentation. We'll defer this time to questions from the committee. Any updates from the bill sponsor, and particularly to this part of the presentation? Okay. And I notice it looks like we've got a couple others online. Would you like to continue or make further comments with the next presenters?
Mr. Chairman, Tim Lampkin, Staff to Senator Stevens. I believe the other folks that are online are available for questions. I believe they did not intend to outright testify. So with that, I'm happy to proceed with the sectional if it pleases the chair.
Okay, at this time, please.
So section one is AS 2810-421A. It relates to the fees currently paid to the DMV for license plates. It would allow for an additional fee, a surcharge, as referenced by Mr. Brown, set by the Arts Council in regulation, not to exceed $50 when a person chooses to buy a new or replacement plate. I should note for the record that it's my understanding, according to Mr. Brown can confirm this, is that the Arts Council does not intend to have it at $50. If currently that would price them out with price sensitivity. And the elasticity and the demand for these plates is likely to be closer to about $5. Currently they're $30, so this would potentially make it $35. That these funds would be designated general funds. Section 2 relates to artworks in public buildings and the percent for art. It adds a subsection so that essentially, the art bank is something that they manage when a piece of art is being decommissioned. As you mentioned, when a building is destroyed or demolished or sold, those pieces of art would then be back in the bank, or the Arts Council bank, and they would determine where its new home would be. Section 3, similarly, is a cross-reference to that specified authority that the Arts Council is managing these artworks when they are being relocated or exchanged. Section 4 is the section AS 4427053, where the Attorney General is legal counsel for the Arts Council, but gives them the flexibility to secure their own counsel from time to time as the need arises. Section 5 is 4427055D, and it relates to their affairs in generating funds, private funds, and it holds harmless those donations that they receive from veto in the Executive Budget Act. Section 6 is 4427080A. It relates to the competition that was discussed earlier. Every 4 years, from it being mandatory, they shall have this competition, to it being optional, that they may have that competition. Section 7 relates to that competition as well, and specifies that they may award the winning artist a modest amount of set and regulations from the funds that the plates generate. And then finally, Mr. Chairman, Section 8 provides an effective date of July 1st, 2021. That concludes the sectional, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay, questions from committee members at this time? Mr. Lampkin? Just a couple quick ones. I have just some initial... It sounds like you anticipate, you know, normally what happens with costs is it will drive down participation, which you had pretty robust participation when it was, you know, the current fee that it set at. Do you anticipate, or did anybody consider what number of plates less you might get based on the cost going up, even though it's small?
Right. As in all things, a season, as if you refer to the demand tab, or I'm not sure if your binders are tabbed, there's a spreadsheet on there. It looks like this one.
Yep.
It indicates the demand and the number of units that were sold. This plate is hands down the singularly most popular plate that's out there. There is some price elasticity, as I've discussed with Mr. Brown. They can reasonably expect a slight drop in the demand, the number of units sold, but that's why I think they're coming in a little bit low with a modest surcharge of only $5 to try to minimize that reduction. But of course, as you may see in the fiscal note, it's anybody's guess, really. They can only estimate.
Okay. We'll talk about the fiscal note and see. I mean, people can take a look at it, and after they have more there. I was going to mention to Mr. Brown, he needs to be careful his volunteering comment. I said, it sounds like he was a volunteer. I'm like, for how many administrations now? Be careful about volunteering to get stuck with it for a while. And the reward for good work is always more work. So, you know, just so you've been there. Is there in the fiscal note, and just anticipation, is there any cost at all that you would see that this change would hit the UGF budget with? I mean, it sounds like it's going to be cost neutral, or the sense of to make that. Are there any associated program costs? You kind of answered it, but I wanted a little more on the record anticipated from this change that we would be on the hook for.
Well, as you'll see, and I think the department, the Arts Council fiscal note,
find it
in the commentary section toward the bottom there. There's a one-time increment of $6,000 for legal fees necessary to change the regs and so forth. That could very well be, well, it could be zeroed out, but that's not for me to say.
Okay. That's all I have at this time. I may have more as we have a chance to look a little deeper at it before we go to the next one. Senator Ramble?
Yes, thank you. I love zeroing out fiscal notes. But anyway, what I'd like to ask you is on page 3, line 4. It says, manage and adopt policies and procedures for relocation, disposition, and exchange of works as works of art required under AS 3527 or money from the Arts and Public Places Fund. Can you just explain about the Arts and the Public Places Fund? Is that the 1% art? I don't know if that's...
There are two, through the chair, Senator Reinbold, there are two funds that we're talking about, two programs, and I think it's, in fairness, I should defer to the chair of the council to speak to it.
Is that Ben Brown?
Yeah. Mr. Brown.
Go ahead, sir.
All right, I am still here. Am I still audible?
Excuse me. Yes, sir, you are.
Bless you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Chairman, to respond to Senator Reinbold's question, they are two separate programs, Mr. Chairman. The Percent for Art program is created in Title 35, Chapter 27, and it calls for the insertion of a piece of art when a new facility is built. And the role of the State Council on the Arts is to sort of help give birth to that baby of the new building and the new artwork that goes with it. The statute's really silent on what happens later on, you know, as the building matures. The Art and Public Places Fund is a fund where proceeds from the 1% allocated for a construction project that are not spent in a project, because sometimes things do come in under budget, those excess funds are deposited in the Art and Public Places Fund. It's not a lot, but then after several years, we'll get $50,000 or $65,000 there, and then the State Council on the Arts will issue a call for pieces to accession to our contemporary art bank. Many of you, Mr. Chairman, and your colleagues have pieces from the Alaska Contemporary Art Bank in your offices, either here or in your home districts. And they also hang in our university buildings, in our courthouses, and in other public facilities where Alaskans come for services. So we have very clear authority in our enabling statute to manage and deaccession pieces in the Contemporary Art Bank. What we don't have is any authority or clear authority to help with things that are part of buildings. And that this provision of the bill, Senator Reinbold, through the chair, is meant to clarify that, because it makes just as much sense for the Arts Council to make sure that the right thing's happening to a piece of art that's built into a building as to a piece of art that's hanging on the wall of your office, if that makes sense. And I'm happy to clarify more. But that's why we are where we are with this language in the bill, Mr. Chairman.
And we have a follow-up.
And thank you. That's actually, and this is not where I was planning on going, but you've opened up the door. I just went through Greening Middle School and Eagle River Elementary this past Friday. I got a tour. They're both very old schools. They got tremendously damaged. We believe it's because it was increased amplification out there, and then it also went to a valley, so it went there and back. And those were on the valley section, basically. But the bottom line here is, in places like that, would you guys now be allowed to work on the art in buildings such as that are being potentially upgraded, or is that going to be part of this now, Bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Reinbold, the bill just gives us statutory authority to develop policies and procedures. That is certainly something that I think we already have had some people volunteer to say they want to be part of the panel that's going to develop what these policies and procedures are. But because we live in a place that has earthquakes and sometimes volcanic explosions and sometimes tsunamis, you know, we have a very dynamic natural environment in Alaska. So to whatever extent those acts of God are damaging buildings and calling into question the security and safety and viability of art that's part of those buildings, that's exactly one of the problems that the policies and procedures we would like to adopt would be targeted to fix. Because we wouldn't want, when they go in to fix, you know, Greening School, them to just say, well, there's a painting on the wall and it's kind of damaged, let's just throw it away. If we can come up with a way to work with the original artist, or if that artist isn't alive, with someone that his family would approve of to rehabilitate the piece of art, we want to get value for the public money that's invested in this. So that's a very good example of the need for this authority for the council. Senator Reinbold, through the chair.
Another follow-up.
So my final thought, I'm going to be looking after, obviously, my own district and Eagle River Elementary in Greening, but I don't want you guys to forget, we got some amazing artists like Van Zyl and stuff in my district, so, you know, just don't forget about the amazing things. I know you guys get to celebrate a lot here. We're a little bit more reserved there in that area in regards to some of the real jewels we have there. But with that, I'm really looking forward to seeing what you can do to help improve, you know, schools, making them a better place. And if there's any amendments or anything we need to do to help ensure that the intent of the bill. What year was the bill passed that was 1% art for construction?
Oh, boy. Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, I'd have to guess that was in the 70s, but without looking at the statute, I can't say definitively.
Okay. Did you have a comment on that, Ben? An additional
Mr. Chairman, it was in the 70s, and we were one of the first states to adopt a percent for art program. I want to say it was 1973, but I also would have to look at my other monitor, which isn't fired up right now, but it's actually in 3527 because that statute is so old, and it's been pretty much the same since it was adopted. So the percent for art program is a little bit younger than I am, but not much.
Copy that.
That's my comment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Other comments from the committee at this time? Okay. A little more robust discussion I thought we might have. That's good. Okay. Thank you to both Senator Stevens for the introduction of the bill and to staff, Mr. Lamford, for coming in today. With no further questions this time, what we're going to plan on doing here is get amendments to this bill, SB 71, by Friday, March 12th at 5 p.m. close of business. You can submit those to my committee aide, Terrence Shanigan. We're going to go ahead and set this bill aside at this time. We'll bring it up at a future time so we can go through those amendments, fiscal notes, et cetera. All right. Thank you, sir. We're going to move on to the second item on our agenda today. It's going to be SB 23, Initiative Severability, sponsored by Senator Reback. As a note for the committee, we're going to have, should have Noah Client. We do actually have Noah Client on board with us today from Ledge Legal as a resource. And Senator Reback, you know the drill. When you're ready, sir, you and your staff, go ahead and put yourself on the record and begin the presentation.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. Thank you for hearing SB 23. For the record, Senator Josh Reback, District M, South Anchorage. SB 23 seeks to protect the integrity of the ballot initiative process. By ensuring ballot initiative language that appears before voters at the ballot box is the same as the language circulated during the signature gathering phase, and to restore the legislature's important role in the initiative process. Alaska's Constitution details a very important right of our residents, the right to enact legislation through the voter initiative process. The legislature also has the right to enact legislation substantially the same as the proposed initiative, thus removing it from the ballot. Per our Constitution, some issues are off limits for ballot initiatives, and initiatives can only cover one subject. But while cursory legal review of language occurs before the Lieutenant Governor's certification, It has sometimes been the case that further review finds constitutional concerns with the proposed language in the initiatives. In those cases, a party can file a lawsuit to force the issue through the court system. This can happen simultaneous to the circulation of the signature booklets. Under current law, if a court determines that language in a proposed initiative is unconstitutional and/or severed, an amended version of the language can appear before the voters. This results in voters seeing potentially a completely different initiative language than the one they supported with their signature. Furthermore, if the courts revise or sever the language after the legislative review process, they deny the legislature its right to review the initiative as revised. The net effect of a court severance is that an initiative can move forward to the voters, an initiative that's potentially very different than the initial version reviewed by the legislature and signed by the people. SB 23 restores a check in the checks and balances the constitutional framers envisioned for the initiative process. Voters should be assured that language on the ballot has not changed from the language in the petition booklets that they supported with their signatures. And further, it restores the legislature's right to review and enact substantially similar legislation to stop an initiative from moving forward. Mr. Chair, again, thank you for the opportunity to present this bill, and I would appreciate the committee's support.
All right, thank you, Senator Reback. We're going to stop at this time here and take questions from the committee for you as the bill's sponsor. So I'll open it up to this time from Senator Ramble.
In a nutshell, would you describe this bill as it being improved in transparency and increasing the integrity of the initiative process?
Senator Reinbold, through the chair, that is absolutely the intent of this legislation.
Thank you.
I've got one for you, Senator Reback. So one of the things I note, and I am glad to see that in this in your bill, is this concept of legislative supremacy. As we go back in time and look at the founders and you read the papers, the Federalist Papers and others, there was a lot of discussion about the super branch, which one would be the best representation of the people because it has representatives from all areas of a state or the country. And, of course, the executive branch is one person, really. And, you know, the courts are, you know, a few people that can essentially rule, if you would, and there was a lot of discussion there. So it looks like, and it's not so much a question, I suppose, as a comment, that part of this is to look at our constitutional authority as a legislative body, as a part of this process, to ensure that we are able to exercise our due diligence on any kind of initiative that may have been changed. And we have certainly seen that debate in recent history throughout that. So I appreciate the fact that you are putting into this a chance for the legislature to ensure that it gets to do its job and is not left out into the cold in a process like this, because that has certainly happened. And you could even comment when we go back to last year, you know, with the COVID-19, the same thing. Legislature has at times been benched from its ability to execute our duties. So I appreciate the process to allow this debate to discuss making sure that the legislature is always able to be involved in the process as the people's branch in the sense of the most diverse and wide representation. So that's, again, more of a comment. Other committee questions at this time? Okay, I assume the intent is to go through a sectional analysis?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'll turn over to Mr. Dirk Kraft, if that's all right.
Please do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Dirk Kraft, staff to Senator Reback. This bill only has one section. It's amending AS 1545-240, that's judicial review, stating that the provisions of an initiative are not severable after being circulated under AS 1545-110. It's a statute governing the circulation of petitions. An initiative petition may not contain a severability clause. And if the courts find a provision of an initiative petition unconstitutional during that review, the lieutenant governor must reject that initiative petition and prohibit it from being placed on the ballot.
Okay, thank you very much for that. All right, time for question grows short on this one, so any further questions or comments before we continue? Okay, so the plan on this one is the same as before. Again, a very simple bill, and thank you for that. It's nice when we get a few of these. We're going to look for amendments to SB 23 until Friday, March 12th at 5 p.m. You can submit them again to my committee aide, Terrence Shanigan. We're going to go ahead and set this bill aside. So, Senator Rivack and staff, thank you for showing up today to present the bill. We'll see you probably next week. We'll take it up then. We're going to continue now with the last item on today's agenda, SB 76, Abandoned Vehicles, Private Property, sponsored by Senator Keel. As a note for this one, we should have Lauren, let me get that right here, McVeigh, Lauren McVeigh, President and CEO of True North Federal Credit Union. Senator Keel, go ahead and introduce yourself and your staff, and when you're ready, begin, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for having me today and considering Senate Bill 76. For the record, my name is Jesse Keel. I have the privilege of representing Juneau and our neighbors to the north here in the Alaska State Senate. With me today is a member of my staff, Kathy Schlingheide. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 76 is a bill dealing with vehicles abandoned on private property. It's illegal to do that, but we've all seen it happen. We know it happens. A vehicle is left in lieu of proper disposal in a private parking lot, on somebody's empty piece of property, any number of places. when it happens today, the private property owner doesn't have many mechanisms to deal with it quickly or efficiently. You can get the owner's address from the DMV, and you can mail them a letter. And the last registered owner, if in fact they care about the vehicle, can come get it. But those are the folks who are law-abiding and care about the vehicle. That's not what we need legislation to introduce or to address. So what really happens with these vehicles is that you have to wait under Alaska law 6 months while it sits on your property, probably attracting vandals, potentially attracting other undesirable behavior. And after 6 months has passed, then you, the private property owner, may send a legal notice to the last registered owner that by a certified mail return receipt and begin a legal process through the DMV. If the vehicle owner, doesn't come get it within 30 days, you can then take your next step with DMV, eventually getting the title to the abandoned vehicle transferred to you, the private property owner. Only then, Mr. Chairman, do you get the great privilege of paying to dispose of it yourself. In a perfect world where there were unlimited resources, maybe we could help with that. But what we can do, Mr. Chairman, is shorten up that six-month waiting period. Senate Bill 76 takes that down to 30 days. Now, importantly, Senate Bill 76 does not change the legal notice and process period where you send that certified mail to the last registered owner and go through the process with the DMV. That is critical to protecting the private property rights of somebody who might be out commercial fishing and have made an honest mistake of some kind. But we can spare the private property owner that six-month waiting period on the front end by shortening that to 30 days. That's the intention behind Senate Bill 76, Mr. Chairman, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay. At this time, thank you for the presentation. Do we have comments or questions from committee members? Senator Rambo?
Just thank you for dealing with this. I mean, it's one of those things that sometimes can fall, you know, way under people's radar. But then when you're out driving around camping and stuff and you just see all this stuff and it's just revolting. So, I mean, it may seem not important in you know, because of all the great things we're dealing with right now. But when we finally go out there and recreate, it is important. So I just want to say thank you.
Senator Keel, did we not take this measure up in the last session as well? And what happened to it?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The Senate passed. Last year it was Senate Bill 183. The House did not manage to take that up in time before a speedy departure from the Capitol.
Okay. There was a speedy departure. All we saw were taillights from many people. Very true. Does your staff, do you have a sectional analysis or anything? I mean, it's very simple. Is there anything else that you would like to discuss?
Mr. Chairman, it's a two-section bill. We could take your time with that if you would like, but I didn't imagine it was necessary. I have staff here to answer all the hard questions I can.
I don't think there appears to be any at this time. Maybe there is. Senator Hohen.
So, thank you, Chair Schauer. So when I first looked at this, I didn't realize that the owner of the property, the real estate, can take property of the vehicle. They can take possession of the vehicle and actually have it titled in their name. Is that a requirement to have the vehicle disposed of, or is that just an option for the property owner?
Mr. Chairman, in answer to Senator Holland's question, before I, as a private property owner, can do anything with your property, it has to become my property. Otherwise, I need your consent to do anything with your stuff. There's an analogy elsewhere in the law, and that's a tower's lien. If you run a tow truck company and you remove a vehicle under our towing laws, you have the opportunity to recover your costs and the value of storage through a tower's lien, which is much quicker and easier to get than the law we're looking to change here, so that tower can be made whole. Ultimately, if the tower's lien exceeds the value of the vehicle, that they can take title to the vehicle and dispose of it if they must.
Thank you.
And we have Lauren online. Is there anything you'd like her to testify to today, or is she just there to ask questions? All I see is a queue, so I assume it's questions only, but I just want to offer the opportunity if there's anything of value to add.
Mr. Chair, for the record, this is Kathy Schlinghide, staff to Senator Keel. I think she would like to testify if the committee has a moment.
Oh, we do. Absolutely. We've got plenty of time. And if you want to go ahead, we'll put her on the record. So, Mrs. McVeigh, can you hear me?
I can. Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I thank you for the opportunity. Senator Keel summarized the situation quite well. Private property owners who don't have any other options have a very long wait ahead of them to dispose of collateral that's been abandoned on their property. And, you know, in my experience, one abandoned vehicle tends to attract other abandoned vehicles. And in 6 months, it can definitely become a problem. So from a property owner's perspective, this is a long period of time. From a lien holder's perspective, I would like to know that collateral securing a loan for, you know, the credit union has been abandoned somewhere much earlier than 6 months. That's good for the credit union. It's good for the members. You know, I think we need time to go through our lien holder process, but 6 months is way too long. I don't think that's the right balance between protecting the property owner's interests and protecting everyone else's interests. So I am definitely support of reducing that 6 month period and appreciate you for entertaining this bill.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Mrs. McVeigh at this time? And just to be clear, that was invited testimony. That's what we will be taking up all these bills, public testimony at a later time after the initial introduction. I do have one clarifying question, Senator Keel, just briefly, for the 30-day notice, does that include mail time? And I ask that in the sense of, because, you know, when you say, like, fishermen and other things could be out for a while, do they get, you know, is that mail time plus 30 days? Is that 30-day the entire window? Because there are people, obviously, that could find themselves parking in the wrong place and come back and their truck is gone when they come back from being out, that kind of thing. So how, and you sort of addressed it, but to clarify, what is that pure timeline, or is that it and then they're done?
Mr. Chair, after the initial what would be a 30-day wait time in this bill, then a certified letter could be sent. Once return receipt has been received on that, that starts the second 30-day clock, which is the notice period.
That's the question I wanted to get on the record, Senator Keel, because I think a lot of people hear that and go, 30 days, I'll be out fishing a boat for 6 weeks. What happens when I get back? And that's why I wanted to just clear that up. So thank you. I figured that was what was going to happen, but I wanted to make sure. Other questions at this time for the committee? Okay, then at this point, thank you, Senator Keel and staff, for showing up today to present SB 76. We're going to have amendments open on this bill until Friday, March 12th at 5 p.m. You can submit them again to my committee, Terrence Shanigan. We're going to set this bill aside. We'll bring it up at a future time when we're ready.
Chairman, thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, once again, inside of 1 week, we're smoking pretty fast on state affairs for this one for moving bills. Next meeting is going to be this Thursday, March 11th at 3:30 p.m. We'll take up bills previously heard and hold public testimony on SB 83, elections voting ballot requirements, SB 84, land vouchers PFD is SB 7, state trooper policies public access, SB 12, military spouse courtesy license, and SB 40, veteran benefit services voter registration. Any further comments or questions before I close this out today? Okay, seeing no further business for the committee, at this time we're going to adjourn at 4:10 p.m.